and welcome to FinTech Insider Focus. I'm Benjamin Ensor, Director of Research and Strategy here at 11FS. In this series, in collaboration with Visa, we're going to shine a light on FinTech in different parts of the world. In the first part of this season, we are honing in on the Middle East's booming financial sector and talking to people right at the heart of it. In this episode, we're taking a closer look at Bahrain. The country has championed open banking in the region, with the Central Bank of Bahrain, or CBB, launching an open banking framework as far back as 2019. So we want to dig into this in more detail to better understand the fintech landscape in Bahrain and the impact that open banking has had to date, the challenges along the way, and what this tells us about how regulation and innovation can coexist effectively and foster a thriving financial ecosystem. So to have this conversation, I'm delighted to be joined by fantastic guests from the region to tell us more. So firstly, a big hello to my co-host, Hassan Kazmi, Head of Digital Partnerships for Central Europe, Middle East and Africa at Visa. How have you been, Hassan?
I'm well. How are you? Good to see you again.
I'm very well. And you're currently in a very flooded Dubai, is that correct?
I am, yes. But it's getting much better.
And we're also delighted to welcome Abdullah Almoyad, founder and CEO of Tarabud. It's great to have you here. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about you and a little bit about your background?
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm the founder and CEO of Tarabud, the region's first licensed open banking provider, on a mission to really make financial services better, faster, cheaper and more accessible in a region which is booming in terms of fintech. And glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you both so much for joining. Just before we dive in, a quick reminder, listeners, that the views or opinions of our panel are their own or our own and don't necessarily reflect those of the companies they are representing. And as always, nothing we say should be taken as tax, financial or legal advice. Please do your own research. Okay, let's dive right in. Hassan, Bahrain is not a country we've covered in detail before on FinTech Insider. To start us off, could you just give us a high-level overview of the FinTech and banking ecosystem in the country?
Yes. So I think the key thing to note about Bahrain is it is the oldest and arguably the most established financial services hub within the region. So, you know, going back to when I was a child in the 80s, when you would hear about financial service in the Middle East, you would only hear about Bahrain. And the reason that's important is it means that Bahrain as a country and the institutions within Bahrain, like the regulators, the central bank, and some of the traditional banks have a lot of institutional knowledge about financial services, the evolution of financial services globally, but then also the evolution of financial services within the region. And then what that means for fintech is all of that history they have, all of the institutional knowledge they have, really helps them become the forefront of fintech within this region. And that's one of the reasons I think that Bahrain took a lead within open banking, because the institutions responsible for supporting open banking really understood banking, because open banking is taking a lot of the different banking services that are oftentimes fragmented and combining them in a way that makes it intuitive sense for the end user. And then you expand on that and build that. But In order to do that in a way that's successful and usable, you arguably need to have a lot of that prior knowledge about banking in general. And I think that is one thing very unique about Bahrain that many people may not have realized before our conversation.
Abdullah, do you agree with that? Do you have anything sort of any perspectives to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I have quite a biased opinion, being born and raised out of Bahrain. But yeah, I think, look, if you look at what's happening in the world and where Bahrain is positioned, I think we must agree that innovation is a product of maybe urgency and competition, putting aside customer experience. Bahrain is small in size with a lot of bigger economies surrounding it. And the government has picked financial services as a core competency to really raise the bar. We've seen it in the introduction of Islamic banking, a lot of the asset management, has really boomed out of there initially. And open banking is something that I'd like to think we played a role as Tarabud in influencing, just in terms of the opportunity. We were the first ones into what was known as a regulatory sandbox in the region at the time, and the first ones out of the regulatory sandbox in the region. And I think just to give you a bit of insight on how the region operates is there was no such thing as open banking at the time we went in. There was no such thing as open APIs, and there was no such thing as third-party providers. When we went in, it was just a concept of the ability to be able to aggregate multiple accounts. But it's really a forward-thinking regulator that says, look, I like this concept. Let's implement the regulation and open it up entirely. And the way it rolled out is where I think there's a competitive edge. And I think we'll start seeing this part of the world really leapfrog ahead of other jurisdictions around the world. But we can get into that later.
And if I'm right, Bahrain was the first country, not only in the Gulf Cooperation Council or the Middle East, but the entire sort of Middle East, North Africa region to embrace open banking and adopt a formal open banking framework. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Not only were they the ones to adopt it and implement it, but also if you think of the way that they did it, mandating all retail banks as opposed to the CMA 9 only in the UK, but mandating all banks to comply within a period of 6 months. It kind of gives you the perspective on the positioning of the regulator, what is possible. The initial frameworks were pretty much a cookie cutter OBIE or Open Banking Standards version 1 implemented, except much faster in pulling the banks together and getting them to comply and creating a robust ecosystem overnight.
Hassan, how important do you think that has been, that sort of early embrace of open banking? I mean, given what you were just saying about, you know, the sophistication of Bahrain and the long established financial sector, how important, how transformative was that early adoption of open banking? I mean, 6 months to comply is not long. How big a deal is that?
I think anytime you're coming up with something that's new and innovative, being the first has significant advantages. One, because you become the leader in trialing and testing. And a lot of times when you're coming up with these things, anything new, it's about trial and testing. And what Abdullah mentioned around the regulatory sandbox, we see that globally. And typically a regulatory sandbox is designed just to do that, which is to try and test in a confined environment. So what that ends up doing is that if you are the first country or the first organization to go and try and test something, you really get to know that content really well. So in the context of open banking, since Bahrain was the first within the region, they were able to try and test a lot of different things. But also, most importantly, as a result of that, they've been able to shape and drive what open banking means. So when you have a first mover advantage, what that typically means is you set the standards and you set the expectations. So yes, moving first has quite a bit of implication in terms of resourcing and investments that you make. But the return on that is the fact that you end up becoming the driving force. And as Abdullah was mentioning, setting standards, setting expectations, and especially on the consumer side, since open banking has, you know, very significant consumer implications, you also have the ability, which I think is a great responsibility, but also very interesting from a product development point of view, is you get the chance to shape customer expectations. Because when you're developing something brand new like open banking, customers hear about it. There's obviously a lot of media behind it, but they don't necessarily know what to expect. So if you're the organization or the country or the region that's driving that and being the first mover within that, you get to shape what the customer expectation will be. So all in all, yes, it's a significant commitment, but has, I think, quite a few interesting benefits, especially around being able to drive that story, drive the narrative, and in the end, fundamentally drive the growth of something like open banking across the region.
Abdullah, I'd love to hear your perspective on that point about customers and customer expectations. At 11FS, we're all about changing the fabric of financial services, and we get really excited when fintech is making a real difference to companies or making a real difference to consumers. Can you tell us a little bit about how open banking's maybe unlocked benefits for people in the country, for either Bahrainis or businesses in Bahrain? Can you give us a couple of examples, some practical differences that open banking is potentially making to people's lives or to businesses?
Yeah, I think it's, we like to think of ourselves as problem solvers. And the way we target certain segments in the market has typically been, what's the largest problem that we can solve? And a few things that we address leveraging open banking have been financial inclusion, financial literacy, and access to funding when it comes to SMEs. On just a few use cases, to give you an example of how quick the ecosystem was to adopt, is when you talk about financial inclusions and those that are in need of microloans, we were able to, through the use of open banking, shorten the time it takes to apply for a loan through our partners from 6 days to less than 4 minutes. And that's through digital applications of loans for microloans, which are people that are in need. And typically, we're not getting access to finance because of old school legacy systems that required salary certificates and salaried accounts and income verification. Whereas now we leverage analytics and open banking data to be able to give these microloans. That's one. The second thing that we've seen a large adoption on overnight has been really elevating financial literacy. And what I mean by that is the quality in which data is positioned or presented, just through simple means of early stage categorization, groceries, fuel, transport, and things like that, we've really been able to help people make better financial decisions. Now, we at Tarabot are entirely B2B, and we choose our partners based on the solutions or the problems that they solve. So we've been really going after financial inclusion, financial literacy, and really expanding the remit of banks. And we tend to think that banks have a fiduciary responsibility or a social responsibility as well, to really bring other segments of the market in. So we haven't been focusing on corporate banking. We've been focusing on other aspects of the market that we've been bringing in. And we've seen immense adoption overnight. Obviously, Bahrain presents a beautiful test bed, also because of its size, in terms of just the adoption. Bahrain's only about 1 million or so people in terms of banked population, with quite digitally savvy banks, with great cloud infrastructure and introduced interoperability, which makes it easy for a fintech to deploy on any of the cloud providers and go to market immediately.
And can you see that difference? You were talking about financial literacy and saying, you know, you're able to show, or through your partners, you're able to show customers, you know, where their money's going and so on. Have you been able to see, maybe through your partners, you know, changes in people's behavior? Have you been able to see that people are perhaps behaving slightly differently, maybe spending more wisely on account of open banking?
I think we're at the early stages of adoption. What we've definitely seen is segments of the market getting access to finance that they wouldn't have previously. The next chapter of our journey is really trying to enable banks the tools necessary to start creating more personalized financial services. And that's the direction that we've decided to go as Tarabot, with our partnership with the likes of Visa and others, is how do we really go become close to the banks and helping the banks move from building a one-size-fits-all product to leveraging the data that they have to build and give Hassan the kind of product that he needs when they need them, as opposed to just waiting for the customer to reach out to a marketplace. Move it from reactive to proactive is what we'd like to approach it as.
Yeah, to really start thinking differently about what kinds of propositions you can offer to customers because you've got that information or you've got more insight about them.
There's a few things that are more on the macro side that are important to also highlight, right? You've got smartphone penetration, some of the highest in the world, in the country. You've got a cloud-first policy, which mandates all government institutions to move onto the cloud, which they've already completed. You've got digital identity across the entire nation. You've got electronic signature laws that have already been implemented. These are all prerequisites to what I like to think is a digital economy. If you can, one, digitally sign, two, have it enforceable by law, three, have infrastructure and APIs exposed across all of government, the sky's the limit as to what you can actually do, because it goes beyond the realm of just open banking. It's literally open data and how you can basically tokenize things. And, well, I don't want to go into it too deep, but you can do a lot more interesting things.
We like going deep on FinTech Insider. It's kind of the point of the podcast.
Yeah, well, you can do a lot of things in terms of, I mean, even beyond just Bahrain, you can do things like real estate transactions, transfer of title deeds, transfer of car deeds, car titles and things like that, transfer of mortgages, switching, digital identity and electronic signature laws once combined, and interoperability across government is quite advanced.
That gets really, really powerful, because you can then, from that government data, you can presumably start pulling in a lot of other types of information about customers, presumably with their permission and so on, that then enables you to see and enable other things.
Yeah, when you look at the UAE and Saudi Arabia and Bahrain as well, even if you just talk about the simple use cases of where open banking started in the US and the UK, and you talk about EKYC, for example, EKYC is not a thing in the Gulf region. If these APIs are available and exposed, and digital identities verified by government there and then. So it's even more secure, but at the same time, it's open for the public use, so long as you plug in.
Hassan, you were going to come in a couple of minutes ago, and we...
Yes, I was just going to build up on a point that Abdullah made around the personalization. And one thing we need to remember about consumer is that in all of the aspects of the day-to-day life, they are getting, in some cases, hyper-personalization. So if you look at, let's say, a streaming service like Netflix, if you look at the streaming audio service Spotify, based on, as a consumer, if I have those accounts and I'm engaging with those services, they can take my data and come up with real-time, hyper-personalized recommendations. And a lot of other companies outside of financial services also have the ability to take a consumer's data with their permission and come up with very personalized recommendation. And I think consumers more and more are looking at the experience across everything that they engage in. And what I mean by that is, if they're looking for if they're comparing a banking experience, they're not necessarily going to compare two banks and say, well, bank A gives me better personalization than B. More and more what we're seeing is consumers are saying, well, this other service that I'm part of, I'll just use streaming as an example, right? They tell me 99% of the times they give me exactly the movies that they know for a fact that I love. So why can't banks give me something like that? So they're making that link. And what they're saying is, in all the other experiences they have, let's say some sort of hospitality experience, they typically stay at a particular hotel chain, and the hotel chain knows everything about what they like and what they don't like. So they're bringing all of those experiences together and saying, well, if I can get a hyper-personalized service in all these other arenas, why can't I get it within financial services? And open banking used properly allows the providers to give that level of hyper-personalization at a very reasonable, or sometimes even at a very low cost, because obviously you need to balance that aspect also. So the power of open banking is much more than just being able to provide services. It's being able to provide very customized, personalized services, and then eventually things like customized pricing to the consumers, which is what they want. And also to be able to do that in real time.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, customers look at the data the banks have, and while I'm sure lots of customers don't actually really think about it, but, you know, banks have access to customers' spending data, they have access to certain types of location data. Banks know an enormous amount of things about people, sometimes things they don't even tell their spouses, right? And yet, to your point, banks historically haven't done very much about it. And open banking suddenly creates opportunity for not just banks, but other providers to really use that data to provide personalization. I suppose one of the conversations you often hear in European markets is about, oh, well, how successful has open banking been? Has PSD2 achieved what people hoped? And so on. And some of that depends on what your initial expectations were and how far you wanted it to go. But I think what the two of you are really saying is Bahrain is a really an interesting example because of the combination of open banking with the electronic signatures, with the digital identity and so on, and with, you know, high smartphone penetration, and also potentially a, you know, relatively small market, you're seeing faster and wider adoption than we've seen in many other markets. Is that correct? Would you say that in some ways Bahrain is ahead of many other economies in terms of how open banking and open data more widely is being used?
I can tell you without a doubt. Look, we operate in the UK as well. And I can tell you without a doubt, the adoption in the Middle East is going to leapfrog what's happening in the UK and broader. But that is not ultimately just because of the frameworks and because of the way that they're implemented. It's multiple folds. Number one, I think there's a few things that you need to just highlight. The market dynamics. The Middle East and North Africa is 18 jurisdictions, a population of 550 million people, which is double the size of Western Europe, with only, if by now, I think it's less than 350 retail banks. That's double the population of Western Europe with less banks than in Germany alone, right? So when you compare these two statistics, the ability to create competition amongst these banks and to connect to 100% coverage, and the role of regulators, where banks initially were government / quasi-government banks in the initial stages, and now the governments are, or the countries are starting to open up, you've got a very hungry banking ecosystem that is looking to innovate as well. So it's not just incumbents waiting for fintechs to flourish. It's also banks that are open to innovation. I think Hassan would know better about this, but every single bank in the Gulf region over the last 2 to 3 years probably has a new chief digital officer, has a consultant coming in, drawing out their new strategies about what they're going to do over the next 5 years. And on top of that, you've got digital budgets that are being unlocked. These are very profitable financial institutions. So I think the difference about the adoption that I see is that I don't think the adoption will be necessarily built on fintech consumption of these APIs, more than it will be banks and incumbents that are innovating the way they introduce new and innovative and advanced products to go to Hassan's point, which is to deliver personalized financial services to their existing customers and remain competitive.
Really, really interesting. We are going to take a very quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to dive deeper into exactly these topics you've just brought up and the wider open banking framework. So listeners, we're just going to take a quick break and we will be back very shortly.
Visa's FinTech Fast Track program is streamlining the onboarding process for fintechs, enabling them to gain access to Visa's powerful capabilities and network. Visa and their enablement partners help fintechs launch and scale cards, virtual credentials, and disbursement programs. To learn more, visit partner.visa.com.
Welcome back to FinTech Insider Focus, where we're taking a close look at open banking in Bahrain. In this part of the show, we'd love to explore a little bit more about how Bahrain's progress in the past few years has translated into meaningful benefits for customers and the economy more widely, and also how Bahrain's status as a financial leader in the Middle East is potentially being challenged by other fast-moving markets in the region. Hassan, I'd love to start with you on just thinking about the impact that regulatory changes around open banking and the opportunities that that has unlocked has actually had on the sort of wider economy or the growth of Bahrain's financial sector. You know, do the actions of regulators to open up things like banking, do they make a meaningful difference to the wider economy?
Yes, the short answer is absolutely yes. And there are multiple reasons for that. First of all, banking all over the world is a highly regulated sector. So what that means is any type of significant innovation or change needs to have regulatory support. And the point Abdullah mentioned earlier on about the regulatory sandbox is one type of support that the regulators can provide. The second is, if you think about the roles of the regulator, it's essential because for an individual, the way they interact with their finances and money then opens up everything else. So a simple example, meaning everything from housing to education to medical to your car is dependent on you being able to transact, make those payments, and so on and so forth. Your salary needs to come into your bank account to be able to take, for you to basically go and live your life. And the reason, the fact that the regulator is so embedded in financial services is the fact that that's how critical it is for us as human beings just to go about our day. So what that also means on the flip side is, as we think about the evolution of financial services, regulators need to play a key part. One, in terms of creating a safe environment for entrepreneurs like Abdullah to go and test different things. And then also at the same time, regulators can take an unbiased view of the results of that experimentation and then decide what's the right way to open up a new segment, a new service, a new product. So you can take the innovation, but make sure that it's balanced in a way where customers get the new products and services that they want, but also in a way where there's an unbiased entity looking at it and making sure that it doesn't have any sort of negative impact on the consumer or the broader economy. So again, that's a very long way of saying that absolutely, regulators and government entities are critical in not only providing access to entrepreneurs, creating a supporting framework for that innovation, but then also making sure that once that innovation is launched into the broader market, it's done in a way where it has a net positive impact on the end user.
So Abdullah, as a Bahraini, the regulators in Bahrain have clearly put a lot of emphasis on being early, having some very advanced regulations to really boost the economy and so on. But now you've got other economies, neighboring economies, bigger economies like the UAE, like Saudi Arabia, sort of catching up in implementing similar regulations. Does that put pressure on the regulators in Bahrain to sort of continue to innovate? Would they continue to innovate anyway? Does it matter if other countries around, if neighboring countries are adopting similar regulations? Does that affect Bahrain? Is there like competition between regulators, or is that a bit of a false idea?
There's definitely competition. I think there's definitely competition across the region. Bahrain was blessed to have a very forward-thinking and innovative governor of a central bank for a very long time, who was the first to introduce many initiatives and be open to innovation. Things like cryptocurrencies and cryptocurrency exchanges and open banking have all been passed through and really supported by him. The one fundamental approach that or position that he took is he wasn't happy with the customer experience that the end user was receiving, for which he introduced and allowed for anything that introduced additional competition that benefits the end user. And that was the thesis that I understood out of it. Aside from that, I think there's two limitations when it comes to this market from a founder's perspective, and that is route to scale. Despite Bahrain being extremely attractive and great to do business in, you're limited into how much you can scale there. So we need other markets around the region to sing to the same or dance to the same drum beat. And right now, what we're seeing, I think Hassan can attest to this, but what we're seeing is everyone's competing to become the fintech capital of the region. We've got Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Saudi, Bahrain, Jordan, Egypt, and many other countries that are now playing to the same thing. Has it introduced interoperability? No. So it does bring with it some nuances of needing regulation, and there, we don't have passporting capabilities. So Tarabut today, we're operational in Bahrain, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia, but we needed to get three licenses in three jurisdictions, deploy across three jurisdictions. But what that allows for is it means we can power fintechs and propositions through a interoperable single point of entry across multiple jurisdictions. So we would like to think that we enable that route to scalability as well. But we are starting to see some markets learning from others teething problems like consent journeys and customer experience as far as authentication and API standards. And we're seeing Bahrain launched open banking. Saudi Arabia is now talking about open finance and things that are even broader. The UAE is talking about a centralized infrastructure that will allow for 16 use cases that will open up everything from open data to open finance. So you've really got some interesting plays coming about. And yes, there is competition, and everybody without a doubt has become or is becoming the fintech capital for a short period of time until another market deploys something. But also, and another thing that's becoming really interesting is, I'll tell you as from a personal journey perspective, is we had a lot of investors that used to look at the region with a lot of skepticism, with where is this region headed? What's going on? Is there clear regulation? What's the fintech ecosystem like? And that's completely turned over the last 6 months. Every single investor is now looking at the region as the next up-and-coming region, in my opinion.
As recently as the last 6 months. That's interesting.
Without a doubt. I think it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. The transformation's happening, and it's inevitable in the space of financial services across MENA. And right now, what we're seeing is it's demanded because of the customer experience, because of the smartphone penetration, because of the disposable income, because of 70% of the population being below the age of 30, right? So you've got all the right dynamics.
The demographics are astonishing when you look at them. Hassan, I'd love to bring you in on some of those points Abdullah's making. I mean, so, you know, Bahrain introduced open banking very quickly, you know, implementing it and drafting it in a couple of years. What do you think's coming next? Do you think we're going to see sort of open finance, open data in Bahrain first? Do you think other countries might move faster?
That's a good question. I think the easy answer is that yes, all of that will eventually flow through the entire Middle East ecosystem. On the timing part, I don't know, because I think there's a lot of factors behind it. And that's tricky to say. I would say the regulators are probably best positioned to do it. But another way to think about it is, if you look at Bahrain and how progressive they've been, again, remember, this is not just banking now, this is going back decades. So if you look at Bahrain and how progressive the regulators and the government entities have been in terms of encouraging growth within financial services, so if you use that as a starting point, then there's no doubt in my mind that they would look at all of these other things that are coming through. In question of timing, I think sometimes it's more administrative logistics, but in my mind, there's no doubt that they'd be looking at all of those things.
There's talk, I believe, of sort of offering a digital dinar and sort of introducing central bank digital currencies and so on. Do you think that's on the cards? Do you think that's likely to come soon?
It's a good question. The way I would answer that is, I think there's definitely an appetite to experiment. So going back to that regulatory sandbox, to go and try and test to see, I mean, we know technically it's possible, and we've seen other countries outside the region that have tried it. But it's still early stages to understand how the usage would actually be. Because in the end, if you think of a CBDC, there are many different viewpoints, right? Some people say, well, is the end goal to replace fiat currencies, like actual paper money? Is the goal to have a parallel but linked currency? And I think all of those questions are valid. I don't think we have enough data yet to develop a global point of view. This is my personal opinion, is that I do think that there's going to be a lot of trial and error and experimentation across the world. And each region initially will probably come up with something different. But eventually, for this to succeed, there'll probably need to be some type of global alignment to say, okay, as the major economies of the world, and major just doesn't mean by size, major also means, in my mind, you know, the economies in the Middle East, because they're quite progressive in the way they're experimenting, is to say, do we, as the global economies, have a point of view of how we want to use CBDCs? So I think eventually, and this is probably a longer term scenario, where there'll be a lot of experimentation and then probably some level of consolidation to say, okay, globally, if you want to use CBDCs, what do they look like? But I think a lot of work needs to happen before we have enough data to be able to figure out what's the right way to use this. And is this something that the customers are willing to use? So the short answer to your question is, I think there's going to be a lot of experimentation, a lot of trial and error, and then probably a period of where everybody sort of sits down, reflects on what we found, and then some sort of global consensus to say, this is the way forward on things like CBDC.
Abdullah, you made some really interesting points a few moments ago about interoperability and standards and, you know, the challenges of operating in multiple markets in the Middle East or even the Gulf region. What would you like to see, either for Vitarabut or for your partners, in terms of sort of regulation to try and make it easier for you to offer some of those kind of personalized services we were talking about earlier? Are there things you'd like to see the regulators doing that would just help you and your partners deliver better financial services out to customers in Bahrain and beyond?
If I look at it, I think the one thing that I always allude to is introducing the gold standard when it comes to regulatory requirements. I think the region's fragmentation does present limitation to the amount of investment that can go into it. But if we can have even just to start off with the GCC, the Gulf Cooperative Council, and all the countries within that, if we can get a gold standard of regulatory requirements that become the prerequisite for passporting, that becomes a much easier play, as opposed to every country having its own cybersecurity requirements and deployment requirements and cloud hosting or data sovereignty requirements. So there are certain things that become nuances after a while that I would like to see unified, because I do believe that despite the countries competing to become the fintech capitals of the region, I think a unified front, in my opinion, would create one of the most attractive fintech jurisdictions for innovations globally, because of having the right young, fast, robust infrastructure that allows for these kinds of things to happen. When you look at just payments, we haven't even spoken about it, but when you talk about payments in the region and real-time settlement infrastructure that's available, when you look at the investments that have gone into this, be it in Bahrain or Saudi Arabia or the UAE, you've also got a unified currency that's pegged to the dollar across all countries, or pretty much all, maybe with the exception of Kuwait. It creates a very interesting opportunity to innovate and deploy.
So collaboration between the regulators and alignment of regulations is actually, in a sense, more valuable than the different regulators competing with each other to try and become a fintech capital. Okay, one quick fire question to both of you to round off our discussion. Is there one thing, or what is the one thing Bahrain can do next to sort of affirm its status as a leader in financial services? Hassan, is there a thing that you'd love to see Bahrain doing?
I think it's continuing to provide the space for entrepreneurs to try and test different things. So, and Bahrain has been doing this for decades. So I think they just need to continue doing that. And that's really where a lot of the innovative solutions like Tharaboot and people like Abdullah can go trial and test and just take it to market. I think there's no secret sauce there, and Bahrain has been doing it for decades. So I think just need to continue doing that.
And Abdullah?
I think there's two things that are hindrances to the adoption of open banking. One has been the consent journey of how a user or a third party can authenticate. And the second thing has been really conformance and testing for any banks that decide to drag their feet. And we've seen this globally, right? We've seen it happen with the CMA9. We've seen it happen in other jurisdictions. And I truly do believe that over the next 3 months, if Bahrain focuses only on the conformance, they've already tackled the consent journey by introducing a national app that allows for biometric consent, that allow for any user to opt into open banking. And that will universalize all of that and solve it. But if they can just focus on the conformance of the banks and make sure that these APIs are stable, exposing what they're supposed to, I think that the innovation will come on its own. And that these are the two things that will create a ripe and innovative, robust ecosystem that fintechs will flock to.
Fantastic. Thank you both so much, gentlemen, for joining me. That wraps up today's discussion. It's been a fascinating dive. Thank you so much. Where can people find out a little bit more about you, Hassan?
So for me personally, LinkedIn, they can look up my profile just using my name, Hassan Kazmi. And then for some of the different programs we have through Visa, it's visamiddleeast.com. So one word, visamiddleeast.com. And then also if they're looking at specifically at fintech programs, it's partner.visa.com. I think those two resources have a tremendous amount of information that people can look into and obviously reach out to us.
And Abdullah? I'm available on and accessible on LinkedIn as well. It's Abdullah Almoyed, Almoayed. And they can access our website on www.tarabut.com. That's TARABUT.com.
And you can find me, Benjamin Ensor, on LinkedIn. Thank you all so much for listening. If you like what you've heard, please do follow the podcast. Leave us a review. Let us know what you'd like to hear about in future programs. If you want to join the conversation, seek us out on social media. Search for 11FS or Fintech Insider, or you can even email us at podcasts@11fs.com. Thank you all so much and goodbye.
Visa's FinTech Fast Track program is streamlining the onboarding process for fintechs, enabling them to gain access to Visa's powerful capabilities and network. Visa and their enablement partners help fintechs launch and scale cards, virtual credentials, and disbursement programs. To learn more, visit partner.visa.com.